Good evening, everyone. I'm Sean, and I'm going to be up here tonight getting to the top of my talk here. Here we go. Just like a couple things about me. One is that I'm one of the local Dharma leaders here. I joined, well, joined, that's like a really interesting word. I started. To actually to practice with the Seattle Insight during COVID while I was living in Victoria, BC. And I moved here to Seattle October of 24. And you may have heard, not sure, that I stutter. I stutter sometimes. And what many don't know about stuttering is a neurological brain, obviously. it is a neurological disorder of the brain, or that is in the actual brain. And so you'll likely hear it. You've probably heard it already. I'm happy to be here to actually add on to the conversations, learning about joy, which is the third part in our actual of the teachings this year, transcendental dependent arising. For someone who stutters, that's like a really scary phrase. But we'll see how many times I can say it this evening. This is the actual path to liberation, to freedom. I'm very grateful to Carrie and Suze, who actually spoke about this last week and the week before, laying the actual groundwork for this topic on joy. I appreciate how their perspective has actually added depth to mine. So this evening, I'd like to share my experiences and my contemplations on two yet on two different yet overlapping joys. One is mundane joy, right? And the other is the joy that is supported by faith, which is supported by dukkha or suffering. And this joy is the third phase of the transcendental dependent arising. Bless you. So this evening I want to explore something that I've come to believe, and this is that joy is joy. Okay. Like the felt sense of joy in the body is what I'm speaking about. Okay. Whether this joy arises from mundane things that happen during your day, or if it's from clear seeing that is as a result of practice, that fundamentally, the embodied experience of joy is the same. The conditions may differ, but the embodied experience of the uplift, of the ease, of the delight, that's joy, regardless of the source. And if what I'm speaking of, if what I've come to believe is true, even if it isn't true, will experience joy. And what could be bad about feeling wholesome joy? So if you're game, I'd like you to try this out with me this evening. I invite you to actually come along and play a little bit with me. You don't have to. It's all an invitation. You can watch and feel joy from the sidelines. That's totally fine. You can borrow joy. Sometimes what we're going through in our lives, day to day, month to month, maybe even year to year, are such that joy can be very distant from us. And borrowing joy might bring it closer to you or ignite a spark for you to remember joy. I'd like to begin with a poem that maybe some of you have heard before. Actually, it's part of an actual poem, it's not the whole thing. And it's titled Saint Francis and the Sow. by Galway Canal. I think that's how you say their last name. It begins, "The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and then touch it is lovely until it flowers again from within of self-blessing." The line of this poem that always gets me every time is that sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness. Sometimes we just need to remember. So before I move on with this and about joy and about mundane joy, I want to acknowledge something that Suze mentioned last week, and that was about Philip Moffat. Philip has played a very large role in my practice and as well in my livelihood, along with being a former co-guiding teacher at Spirit Rock. Philip is also the founder and president of Life Balance Institute. It's a nonprofit, and it's dedicated to helping folks to actually cultivate the inner skills that's needed to meet life's transitions with clarity and intention. And Philip has trained three cohorts to be life balance strategists to actually move his work even further. I was one of 23 in his last cohort. And Suze mentioned the line that Philip often speaks when offering the dedication of merit. And I'll share that last week when I was listening online and Suze mentioned this. I was like, damn, she said my line. But I thought, it's joy. It's okay. It's totally fine. And the line is what he says at the end. And what I want to actually speak on is that at the end of the line, he says, "May all know love, joy, wonder, and liberating wisdom in this life just as it is." That's the part I want you to clue in on. It's this life just as it is. For me, it is wishing us all to have an intimate relationship with love, with joy, with wonder, and liberating wisdom with the life we have. Not changing the life we have, not fixing it, not waiting for us to get it right or for the external them to actually change. It's rather, can we notice, can we recognize, can we know the love, joy, wonder, and liberating wisdom that is already unfolding in our lives? So with that intention, I'd like to reintroduce you to joy. And I'll say that for some of us have an easier access to joy. We all have moments, and these moments may actually last for a while, where we wonder if we will feel joy, or we wonder if we will feel joy again. I spent a good deal of my 20s where joy was nowhere in sight. Right? So joy, mundane joy, can be close or it can be very far away. So let's start with mundane joy. I'm going to share a part of a teaching that I do with leaders in different industries and with graduate students. And it's an actual part of a series that I do on compassionate leadership. And to access joy, it requires you to be vulnerable. It requires, and when we are vulnerable, this is what is required for compassionate action. So leadership trainings on compassionate leadership are supported by joy. And there's a lot of research on leadership and joy. This research isn't quite playing out in our present day, but there is still a lot of leadership that link the importance of leaders having access to their actual joy. So how I usually bring this into these environments, I'm just going to share you one slice of it. And there's very clear reasons why we need joy in the work, in the workplace. Leaders must engage with their joy. We all must engage with our actual joy. We must know what joy is. We must be open to joy, be vulnerable to the feeling of joy. Even to have a joyous mindset is very important. So in other words, we need to regularly be joyful in an authentic way, as best as we're able. So I want to give you a closer feeling of joy. So everyone online, everyone in the actual hall, I want you to think, recall, or remember your hands down, without question, number one joy. And I say this intentionally. It is important that it is your hands down, without question, number one joy. It's the joy that always makes you smile. Every time. Without fail. It's that when you think of this or the experience, that you smile from within. Every time. Without fail. When I say I want you to think of your hands down, without question, number one joy, this goes above and beyond the basic what brings you joy question. That's not what I'm asking you. I'm not asking you what brings you joy. I'm asking you for your hands down, without question, number one joy. It might be something that you are anticipating. That's fine too. But this is undisputed, right? So, think of that now, please, everyone. If you can bring to mind, hands down, without question, number one joy. Just kind of give me a little raised hand if you think that you actually have it. A few people, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Folks online, a few hands, maybe, kind of. Okay. All right. Now, just for kicks, think of your number two. Because for some of you, you may have been struggling. So have two. Okay. And I'll share that oftentimes we pick the one that we think we should pick. And then we're like, oh, I should pick my, you can fill in the blank. But there's another joy that's really kind of sitting back there that you really want to pick. So pick that one too. Okay. It also brings you joy, right? You just might have had some sort of a struggle between which one you would actually choose first. So I would like you to choose them both. So now you have at least two joys. Most of us? Thank you. Nice, nice. I want you to take a moment and I want you to savor these joys that you have in your mind. A memory or something anticipated in the future. Just savor them. Neuroscience tells us that when we savor our positive thoughts, not clinging to our thoughts, but when we savor them, when we linger in them, I like the word linger, when we linger in the positivity, that there is a chemical change in our brains. Your brains are changing right now because you're lingering and you're saving and in what was to bring you joy. So I would like to share my number one joy with you. And this is an actual heads up to Kathy, who is working our tech online. And actually for us all, after I share my number one joy, I'm going to give you the opportunity to share joy in the actual hall with each other. That opportunity gives us, we multiply joy when we share it. And for those of you online, what I'll say is that if you would rather not be paired, if you would rather not be in an actual breakout, once I share, you can actually exit the actual meeting and you can join back in about 5 hours or whatever, 6 minutes. We just want to give the opportunity for Kathy to make sure that everyone has someone to share joy with. Right? So, sharing my hands down, without question, number one joy. When my son was little, he was about 4 years old, he would count all the time in this very quiet voice, like 1, 2, 3, 4, you just count. I could hear him counting when he was playing, when he was getting dressed. 23, 24, 25, 26, just counting. When he was getting ready for bed, 35, 36, 37, 38, always counting. Not counting objects, just counting just to be counting. If we were getting ready to go somewhere, he might ask, "Mom, when are we leaving?" I'd say, "Oh, in about a minute." 1, 2, 3, 4. Not to hold me to my word or anything, but just to count. Right? One day we were out walking and he was holding my hand. And if you've ever walked with a 4-year-old, skipping, jumping, twisting, turning, I don't know really if they know how to put like one foot directly in front of the other, but it's just movement, this kind of movement. And that's what he was doing. He was skipping, jumping, and twisting as we were walking, and he's holding my hand. And I could hear his quiet counting, 79, 80, 81, 82. And after a few seconds, he stopped. He stopped moving. He stopped walking. And he was looking off into space. And I stopped because, whatever, he stopped, you know. And he slowly looked up to me and he said, "Mom, is there a such number as 111? And I paused and I just knew that was a special moment. And I looked and I said, "Yes, there is a number 111. And his face just lit up. And he started skipping and counting. 111, 112, 113, 114. He just was elated. That, when the moment that my son discovered the number 111, is my hands down, without question, number one joy. Every single time I think of the moment of his face lighting up and discovering that just numbers just keep on going and that there's always more, right? That helps me to smile from within every time without fail. So, because we know that joy is something that magnifies and we can manifest it, especially when we share it, I want to give you the opportunity to maybe be in groups of two, and if there's maybe an actual odd number, having a group of three, and the same of what's online. If you would not like to be in an actual group, then if you could rejoin, if you wish, in about 5 or 6 minutes. So, just kind of share with each other either joy, your number one joy, your number two joy. I will ring the bell after about 3 minutes because I've done this many, 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 many times, and sometimes people get over-enthused with their joy, and the next thing you know, the other person hasn't there had the opportunity to share. So I will give you about 3 minutes. I'll ring the actual bell. Once that's just a gentle hint to switch to the other person, and then we will reconvene back here, okay? There we go, there we go. This always happens. It's quite all right. It's quite all right. And I thank you for your patience. It's not always easy to have things happen in the hall, be the actual same for the actual folks online, but you know. I'm wondering if, Ryan, did you have the mic? What I'd just like to do is maybe hear from two people what the experience was like. Not your joy necessarily, but what was it like sharing, or what was it like hearing? Just maybe two folks in the actual hall and as well online. You can raise your virtual hand, but what was the experience like talking about your joy or hearing another person's joy? That's just someone who would like to share. No brave souls? Okay, that's fine. Oh, sorry, Judith, yes. Online, please.
Yeah, it was actually very joyful. I mean, it was like infectious, you know, because even though what my partner was talking about was something that is a little bit, you know, not part of my life, yet it was like I could catch his joy and he could catch mine. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. That what you are speaking about is one of the actual points of joy. You don't need to like another person's joy to feel their joy. They may be talking about cats and you're like, I am allergic to cats. But you can feel the sense of what they're talking about of being with their cat. You can feel that joy. So that's wonderful. There was another person's hands up. Who else was it? I'm sorry. It was Jude and one other person. Oh, Anne, please. Yes.
I was going to say the same thing. It was just joyful. Like it was so fun. I loved hearing about it.
Good, good, good. Great. What I often see is that people are leaning in. They actually get closer to each other. I see smiles. I see head nodding. I see heads going back and laugh like, oh, that's great. You know, you get all of these actual expressions in your body of joy. And this is kind of what I was actually hoping that you would start to get a sense of as you remember or reacquaint or reintroduce yourself to joy, knowing that, you know, that for many of us, we have a distant relationship to joy. But is it still possible to witness joy or to borrow someone else's joy? You don't feel joyful right now? Things are going on? Absolutely. But maybe you'll remember my story of my son discovering the number 111. I'm sure, I am positive, there's another kid on this planet in this moment discovering the number 111, and their face has lit up exactly the same way. Joy is all around us, but can we get close enough to it? Thank you, Ryan. So I am hoping that just from that experience and witnessing mundane joy, the kind of joy that actually makes us smile and that we can recall and we can savor, that maybe that's still feeling it in your body right now or it's in the actual room. And I invite you to remember this joy, this mundane sense of joy, because I believe it can help us to recognize a more subtle joy that arises from practice. The joy that you maybe experienced a few moments ago may be a more heightened joy, but oftentimes the joy that's related to our practice is subtle, and we may not recognize it. We may actually kind of skip over it, almost. The joy that the Buddha describes as the Pamoja, this joy is supported by faith, and it comes from the arising of our encounter with actual suffering. The sutta, Transcendental Dependent Arising, is translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And he describes this joy. It says, faith functions as a support for the next link in the series, joy or gladness, by permitting the outlet from the pent-up tensions of an existential impasse brought on by the reflective encounter with the problem of suffering. Right. So what he's describing is that this joy that arises from faith that permits an outlet from the pent-up tensions that is brought on by honestly encountering suffering. When we honestly encounter suffering, when we see it, right? So, and maybe it's like a simpler way, is that we have faith in the practice and we stay curious about our suffering. Not running away from it, but investigating it. And joy can arise from as a release from our investigation. It's an opening. It's a breath of maybe fresh air in the midst of difficulty that helps us to stay on the path. I've experienced this joy. It's very subtle. It's a subtle version of what was shared a bit earlier. And I might not use the word joy. I might use the word uplift. I might use the word delight. But whatever the word it is, it's this embodied feeling that's the same as what was felt earlier, but the magnitude of it just might differ. I have this natural curiosity about what I am experiencing. And I think that this is also very helpful. So what is happening in the moment, I think that this actually plays out in my practice as well. So there's this interest, there's this knowing, there's a curiosity. So I want to share just a small example from my practice of this very, very, very subtle joy. I have, including suffering, I can become very, very sensitive to sound and light and scent. And so this one time during a guided meditation, which I do just about every morning, I'm listening and the volume unexpectedly increased to an irritating level, irritating for me, irritating level. And I couldn't make the adjustment to the sound right away. And I could just feel this like irritation arising and just building in my body, just actually sensing and these thoughts actually swirling. I tried to stay with it. I tried to actually practice with it, but I just couldn't. Opened my eyes and I turned it down, and immediately my whole body just relaxed. I smiled. There was ease. There was comfort. There was relief from that momentary dukkha. But this is what I noticed. I got really curious. I was like, wait, something else is happening here. What actually is happening here? And then the question arose, what if your preference weren't here? And I just laughed. Like, what if my, I was like, okay, my preference. If my preference were different, if my preference for a different volume hadn't been there, the irritation wouldn't have been there. It wouldn't have existed. It wasn't the sound. It was my preference for the sound. So in actuality, it was me. It wasn't the sound. And this recognition, this clear seeing of knowing that it was my preference, that was what the laughter was from. It was from clear seeing. It was from investigating the suffering underneath the story. Can we drop below the story and see what is happening in that moment? That laughter that I had from clear seeing was ease, delight, and an uplift. It wasn't from getting my way. It wasn't from that I turned down the actual volume. It wasn't that. It was clearly seeing that my suffering was happening as a result of my preference in that moment. Present moment awareness, meeting unpleasant Vedana with interest rather than aversion. Joy arising from clarity. I still have the preference, but it's softer. And I smile when it shows up, like, yeah, that's it. I don't like bright lights. Got it. I really don't. I sit somewhere else. Yeah. This is the joy that supports me to stay on the actual path, because I can see things, or I can see some things clearer. So I want to return to the actual poem, that sometimes it's necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness. Tonight we've practiced remembering mundane joy, and my hope is that you remembering your hands down, without question, number one joy that makes you smile every single time. We've explored a more, the actual same embodiedness, but maybe a little more subtle. There's an uplift, there's an ease that comes from clear seeing in the midst of difficulty, when we're curious about the story underneath. I believe, and I invite you to test this out in your own practice, that to cultivate one can strengthen your noticing, your recognizing, your knowing of the other. I believe that joy is joy, and that the embodied feeling is the same. Only the conditions are different. When we practice saving mundane joy, we are training ourselves to recognize the feeling of uplift, ease, and delight. And when the same quality arises in our practice, perhaps it's a little more subtle, perhaps it's maybe a little bit briefer, we're more likely to notice it and meet it and let it support us on our path. Let it support us towards being curious a little bit longer, staying with what we're feeling a little bit longer, just investigating openly without clinging. So may we all have the opportunity to reteach ourselves joy's loveliness in all its forms. I thank you for your kind attention. Let's just let us sit for a moment, let the words just kind of fall away. We have a few moments. If there's any questions or reflections or comments, those online, please raise your virtual hand if you would like to share. Those in the hall, we've got a microphone with Ryan, so yeah. Anne, you have a question? Or is that my comment? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really just kind of a comment. I think I've been thinking about this for most of the month, but, and it's kind of, I don't know, I think kind of adjacent to what you were talking about, but one of the phrases that has stuck with me for the last year or two, I don't know where, I mean, came from Sim somewhere, but it was the idea of having a heart that's big enough for the world. Mm-hmm. So encompassing suffering and joy, that to me is, it's like that. And it's like, I notice it just like in the tiniest things, like walking down the street and just like listening to the birds or whatever, where I'm totally not clinging. It's like so, so tiny, but I'm aware in a different way than I used to be. And I'm actually very drawn towards joy. And I think the harder work for me is to have a heart that's big enough for suffering. But the practice is kind of like, I know that it's all there. Mm-hmm. Like it's all there in the world, you know, and I'm cultivating the heart that can be with it.
Yeah. 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 What you're saying reminds me of that we experience, was it 10,000 joys and 10,000 sufferings? That both are in our lives. I mean, we live in the realm of opposites, and so experiencing, and yes, and so are we able to walk down the street and experience what may be, what the things that we may know that are actually happening in our lives as well as the world, and know that there's a hummingbird that's just right on the side, just buzzing around, drinking some nectar. Are we able to hold both of those? I too tend to be more on the side that's like, where's the hummingbird? Where's the hummingbird? So I do have to also, as well as kind of to actually allow my heart to open and to experience both. And so I think that that is our practice. Can our hearts be open enough to experience both? Can we go under our stories that will often get in the way of us experiencing both, or to have a preference for one versus the other? So, yeah, yes, I think
Thank you
so.
so much. Loved it.
Thank you, Nan. Yes, Ryan.
Sean, something I really appreciated about what you said was in your description of your sort of hands down joy. It was a moment, right? When you first described the ask of, what is your hands down joy? I sort of felt like I needed to, expectations. You kind of intimated that or hinted at this, right? Like, okay, well, I mean, obviously I've got to pick my kid, right? But boy, that's a lot of pressure to put on someone, right? She has to be the embodiment of my joy all the time. And when you described it not just your son, but a moment with your son, which is what I appreciated, right? What it opened up is it was a joyful spark of a moment that I experienced. And I also really appreciate that because it also, I feel like it lightens the sense of joy and allows us to even the sense, even in the midst of all these difficult things like Anne was talking about, it allows us, gives us the freedom to experience these sparks of joy, these moments of joy to keep leavening things for us. So.
Thank you for that, Ryan. Yes, I do think we put a lot of pressure on our joy, that it needs to be perfect. It needs to be there all the time. It needs to be the same. And it is a moment. It is a spark, or I should say, it actually what it can be. I have had, when I have done this before, I've had multiple times where a person has come up to me and whispered in my ear and said, "Is it okay that I didn't pick my children?" And it was, and it is this, it's the pressure that we feel that, oh, this one should be, and this one person said, "I really love being with my horse. I really do." Or I really love skiing. Love my kids, but man, skiing. And so, are we able to lighten up and really feel those sparks and not feel that it should be this joy versus another joy? Yes, Kathy, please.
Thank you, Sean. This was such a powerful presentation. I think you created here for us to hold us in. And the one thing that really stood out for me, for myself, is the particularity. Like it, from these global possibilities, which is, my mind tends to go there and says, "Oh, everything's ruined," or, "Oh, everything's all right." But no, just the particularity. And that's going to be real helpful for me, I hope, going forward, So thank you. And who was the author of that beautiful poem? I'd like to look it up.
Would I say it? Galway, Galway. I think it's last name Kinnell. Yeah. I love that the poem is about the loveliness of a sow. I love that. Love, you know. We all have loveliness from within. Thank you. Anyone else? Got, yeah. Did anyone find it difficult to recall or maybe to recollect or to think about their actual joy? Anyone? Some? Okay. Yeah. It's there for sure. Like, we aren't always close to it. So what I love about the actual of the concept of borrowing someone's joy. Yeah. And one of the things that is also nice about this is that when you hear another person's joy, maybe you can call their joy up. You know, you can remember what they actually said. And that will start. And joy builds on joy, and it gets larger and it gets larger, and it will like magnify. So I also like to think about my joy happening somewhere else in the world. Because it means that we don't own joy, you know. There are other people in the world right now who are doing those things that bring you joy. You know, they're with their actual dogs, or they're on a walk, or they're having an amazing cup of coffee, you know, if that's the thing that actually, or whatever brings you joy. I like to remember that joy is happening in the world. If there aren't any other questions or reflections or comments, going once. Yes, please. Ryan up in the front here.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean. My name's Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
This month, this is just an observation that I'm sharing. When this first came up, I really was convinced, like, I'm just not good at joy, and I've always thought that about myself. I'm a very hard worker, and over the course of the month, it's just been clearer and clearer to me. Oh, well, that's joy. Why am I not calling that joy? This sense of flow that I'm having, and just, you know, why am I not calling that joy? And the delight in the, or even what's sometimes like a neutral aesthetic, like just seeing things, a color or a shape or whatever. Why don't I call that joy? So the month is just, it's been a really interesting reframing of a kind of fixed idea I had of myself. Mm-hmm. It's been nice. And I imagine maybe there are others who've experienced that too. So nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's amazing what you said. I'm so glad that you shared that. Why aren't we calling these moments joy? These moments of uplift, these moments of just to see something clearly, you know, an actual feeling, this actual sense of vedana, to notice pleasant vedana, to notice unpleasant vedana, to be present in the moment. There's an uplift that happens. And so are we able to notice, recognize, and know what we're actually sensing? I think oftentimes if we are able to drop the story, that would help a great deal. You know, yeah, just like letting go of the story.
Yes.
Well, good peoples, Hope that you will experience more joy, recognize more joy throughout your week, and we'll see you in more spaces like this, either online or in the hall throughout the week. Please check the website because there may be an event that you would like to actually be here for. Thank you so much.